It is the epic of epics, the most celebrated and enduring of all war stories ever told. In sparest outline, the ancient legend of the Trojan War tells of the 10-year-long siege of the Asiatic city of Troy by a coalition of Greek forces to regain Helen, a famously beautiful Greek noblewoman who had been taken to Troy by the Trojan prince, Paris. The war was won by the Greeks, who finally gained entrance to the fortified city by hiding their best men inside the belly of a gigantic wooden horse alleged to be an offering to the god Poseidon. After the deceived Trojans dragged the horse inside their own fortifications, the hidden Greeks emerged at night, sacked the city, set it aflame, and killed or enslaved all remaining Trojans. The greatest war story ever told commemorates a war that established no boundaries, won no territory, and furthered no cause. The war is cautiously dated to around 1250 BC. Its story was memorialized by the Iliad, an epic poem attributed to Homer and composed some 5 centuries later, around 750 to 700 BC. Homer's Iliad is the only reason that this inconclusive campaign is now recalled. That's from the opening of The War That Killed Achilles, the true story of Homer's Iliad and the Trojan War by Caroline Alexander. War, it is a constant in our weary, if competitive, world. The Iliad, at its core, the story of a warrior, of Achilles, the most glorious, beautiful, and thoughtful of Greek warriors of his day, and of his conflicted Asian foe, a Trojan. Today we would read this as a Turk warrior. Two warriors who meet on the plain before the majestic Turkish city of Troy in battle to the death as their respective armed warriors look on. As Alexander tells us in her preface, the reason for the Iliad's continued fascination is not difficult to fathom. In addition to being a poem of monumental beauty and the origin of some of literature's most haunting characters, the Iliad is first and foremost a martial epic, its subject, warriors and war. If we took any period of 100 years in the last 5,000 years, it has been calculated, we could expect, on average, 94 of those 100 years to be occupied with large-scale conflicts in one or more parts of the world. This enduring, seemingly ineradicable fact of war is, in the Iliad's wise and sweeping panorama, as intrinsic and tragic a component of the human condition as our very mortality. And so it is that the story of Achilles, the premier warrior of the ancient Greek world, truly the story of humankind? Our author certainly thinks so. The opening chapters of The War That Killed Achilles set the stage for the story that is to be told, a story that has lived through the ages, literally for thousands of years, a story that has seen its own century-long loops and swings from the very likely oral tradition that was condensed by the ancient Greek storyteller Homer into a tale that tells the last 10 days of what was likely a decade-long war, a tale that Homer focused on the heroic and emotionally conflicted hero Achilles and his archenemy Hector. Yet this tale of Achilles finds many centuries later the medieval Europeans who had lost their cultural contact with their ancient Greek progenitors after the fall of the great Roman Empire turning their backs on Achilles, the hero of the Greek peoples, and instead lifting up the unlucky Hittite, the noble-born and bred Trojan Hector, whose death at the hands of Achilles was painted by middle-age tale-tellers as the epitome of death by a heroic warrior. The east-facing Trojan Hector was to be much more lauded over the emotionally conflicted, albeit western-facing, Achilles. Centuries come, centuries go, and with the slow reawakening and rise of interest in and connection to the ancient Mediterranean world, with the small but curious intellectuals at the core of the European Renaissance, through the years of the Elizabethan English Renaissance in England, we find our Greek hero rising once again. The heroism of Achilles once again comes to the fore, giving us the Achilles we have come to know today, most recently portrayed by none other than Brad Pitt in the big screen hit Troy. And so, in our modern interpretation of this ancient tale, we return to the story of ancient Troy, a metropolis on the Turkish Mediterranean coast that has been besieged by the Western Greeks for going on 10 years. sparked, as we know, by the kidnapping of the beautiful Helen. A massive Greek army has crossed the seas to lay siege to the Trojans, who had stolen the beautiful consort of a Greek warlord. Achilles, the greatest warrior of his time in Western Greece, appears in our story as disgusted with the warlords with whom he has been fighting for so long, disgusted with their corruption, their avarice, their incompetence. Modern readers may well see Achilles as a skeptic of war leaders he has come to know outside the walls of Troy. But as a warrior, Achilles cannot pass up one of the greatest battles of his age, a battle, our author notes, that truly had no victor, making the tale of the Trojan War and its uselessness a tale that she holds was understood by the ancient Greeks as we understand it today, a curse on the leaders of war that rings down through the ages, even into our own. Yet finally, this ancient story of Greek versus Trojan is that of a battle in a battlefield of such import that the true life great conqueror of the known world, Alexander the Great, he of the ancient Greeks, would wistfully wish he could have joined in that war that had no real ending or real success. So, if you're a fan of history, particularly the history of the ancient Mediterranean cultures, I think you'll enjoy this book. Or if you're curious about the ways in which folk heroes come to interact with their classic stories, whether those heroes come with the story or in a later telling, you'll enjoy the sleuthing our author takes us through as the book reaches its midpoint. But for heaven's sake, please be sure to read the fluid, exciting translation of The Death of the Trojan Prince Hector. By the hand of the Greek hero Achilles, Carolyn Alexander gives us her own translation in The War That Kills Achilles, and it is a beautiful translation at that. Her English language translation of this ancient classic invests new life into a story so often told on screen and in print. Here's just a bit of the story to tempt you to read more yourself. Let's join our story and read as Achilles is chasing the Trojan Prince Hector around and around the walls of Troy, seeking a victory man to man, not army to army, as a hero ought to seek. Achilles is aided in no little bit by the gods of Olympus in his quest for everlasting glory. As Carolyn Alexander has translated the Greek prose, she writes, "Then the gray-eyed goddess Athena came up to the son of Peleus, and standing near addressed him in the winged words, 'Now I hope, illustrious Achilles, beloved of Zeus, to carry honor for us two back to the Achaean ships. After breaking Hector, insatiate though he may be for battle, he can no longer get clear of us. Not if Apollo, the far shooter, should suffer countless trials for his sake, groveling before Father Zeus of the Aegis. But you stop now and catch your breath, while I make my way to Hector and convince him to fight man to man.' Thus spoke Athena, and Achilles obeyed and rejoiced in his heart and stood leaning on his bronze-flanged ash spear. She left him and came up to shining Hector in the likeness of Deiphobus in form and steady voice. Standing close, she spoke winged words. 'My brother, swift Achilles presses you hard, pursuing you around the city of Priam in the swiftness of his feet. But come, let us stand firm and defend ourselves, holding fast.' Then great Hector of the shimmering helm addressed him in turn. 'Deiphobus, even before you were far dearest to me of my brothers, those sons whom Hecabe and Priam bore, now I am minded to honor you even more in my heart. You who dared for my sake, when you saw me with your eyes, to quit the walls where the others remain inside.' Then the gray-eyed goddess Athena spoke to him. 'My brother, our father and lady mother implored me greatly, entreating in turn and the companions about them to remain there, for so great is the dread of all. Yet my inner spirit was harrowed with impotent grief. And now let us two press straight forward and go to battle, and let there be no restraint of our spears, so that we shall see if Achilles, killing us both, will bear our bloodied arms to his hollow ships, or if he will be broken by your spear.' Thus spoke Athena, and with cunning led him on. But when, as they advanced, they were close together, great Hector, the shimmering helm, spoke first. 'No longer, son of Peleus, shall I flee from you as before I fled three times around the great city of Priam, nor could then endure to withstand your charge. But now my spirit stirs me to hold firm before you, I will take you or be taken. But come, let us swear an oath upon our gods, for they will be the great witnesses and protectors of agreements. I will not, outrageous though you are, dishonor you if Zeus grants me to be the survivor and take of you your life. And when I have stripped you of your splendid armor, Achilles, I will give your body back to the Greeks, and you do the same. Then looking at him from beneath his brows, Achilles of the swift feet spoke. Hector, you who have done unforgettable deeds, not to me propose your agreements. As there are no pacts of faith between lions and men, nor do wolves and lambs have spirit in kind, but they plot evil unremittingly for one another, so it is not possible that you and I be friends, nor for two of us there will be oaths, before that time of one of us falling will sate with his blood the shield-bearing warrior god. Recollect your every skill. Now the need is very great to be a spearman and brave warrior. There will be no further escape for you, but soon Pallas Athena will break you by my spear. Now you will pay in one sum for all the sorrows of my companions, those whom you have killed, raging with your spear. It's quite a beautiful, moving, and illuminating translation. She bases it on Richard Lattimore's famed modern translation, and as she tells us, decides to produce her own translation of the death of Hector because she did not want to lift an entire chapter from another scholar's book. Let's let Carolyn Alexander have, indeed, the final words in our review as she concludes her book, The War That Killed Achilles, with these words. What if Achilles had honored his own first impulse, returned to his home, grown old? Perhaps he would have restlessly paced out his life in the court of his father. Perhaps, like disillusioned veterans of later wars, he would have taken to the woods and mountains of his childhood, surrounded by that inscrutable band of brothers. As it is, the conclusion of the Iliad makes clear that Achilles will die in a war that holds no meaning for him whatsoever. This was the centuries-old martial tradition inherited by Homer, ultimately resolved. The stirring, bloody battles, the heroic speeches, and the pride of a warrior's spirit all have been faithfully retained, along with the dramatic outlines of the ancient story. The Iliad never betrays its traditions. But the Iliad also never betrays its subject, which is war. Honoring the nobility of a soldier's sacrifice and courage, Homer nevertheless determinedly concludes his epic with a sequence of funerals, inconsolable lamentation, and shattered lives. War makes stark the tragedy of mortality. A hero will have no recompense for death, although he may win glory. The War That Killed Achilles, what our author has titled The True Story of Homer's Iliad and the Trojan War, it's a book about war. It's a book about heroes. It's a book about those who are conflicted in times of battle. It's written by Carolyn Alexander. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.